National Broadcasting Company present, transcribed, Sir Ralph Richardson, your host in Theatre Royal.
This is Ralph Richardson. From time to time, I'm inviting some of my friends from the theater to join me as my guests in this program. And today, I'm very happy to welcome an actor whose recent work on the stage, and particularly on the screen, has made him one of the best known and best loved of our stars. I refer to Alec Guinness. He has chosen to appear in a role created by the late H.G. Wells, a part which, in my opinion, might very well have been created for Alec himself. But here, then, is Alec Guinness, both as your storyteller and as Fotheringay, in H.G. Wells' The Man Who Could Work Miracles.
This is a most unusual story. In some ways, perhaps you'll find it rather hard to believe, but I can only retell it to you as the author told it to me, and I can hardly suppose that he would have made the whole thing up in his head, he being one of my parishioners at the time. The hero of the story, I think we shall have to call him our hero, was a clerk at Gomshott's, the drapery store. And his name was George McWhirter Fotheringay, not the sort of name I personally should have associated with a gift such as he possessed. I remember the fellow perfectly well. He was greatly addicted to assertive argument. And it all began with an argument in the bar of our local hostelry, the Long Dragon.
Thanks, I don't mind if I do.
Same again, Miss Maybridge, and half a pint of wallop for our new friend here.
Oh, ta.
Oh, then, where was I?
Well, you were talking about miracles.
Oh, that's right. Now, look here, Mr. Beamish. Before we go any further, let's clearly understand what a miracle is. The way I look at it, a miracle is something contrary-wise to the course of nature, done by the power of will. If you like, something that couldn't happen without being especially will.
Oh, so you say.
Well, isn't it? Oh, what do you say, sir? Am I right? A miracle is something contrary-wise to the course of nature, done by the power of will.
Well, yes, I suppose it is.
No, you can't deny that, Mr. Beamish.
Well, no, not so far as it goes.
Very well. Now, let's take a common instance. What we have here, swinging from a ceiling, a paraffin lamp, or perhaps I should say a kerosene lamp.
Right.
Or either way, we can agree to call it an oil lamp. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Well, now, let me show you what I mean by a miracle. That oil lamp, in the course of nature, couldn't turn upside down and keep on burning, could it?
Oh, you say it couldn't.
Well, could it? Never mind what I say. What do you say?
No, it couldn't.
Of course it couldn't. If the lamp turned upside down, it would go out in the course of nature. Any oil lamp would. Very well, then. Here comes someone, as it might be me, and stands, as it might be here, and says to that lamp, as I might do, collecting all my willpower, lamp, turn upside down in mid-air, without breaking, and go on burning steady.
Good heavens, it has done. Here, upside down, here, mid-air.
Look out, look out, is this going to fall? Oh, no.
I can't keep it up, my willpower, any longer.
Look out. Look out. It's a long way.
Get out of the way.
Oh, dear. George Fotheringay, you ought to be ashamed. Oh, what do you think you're playing at, coming in here and playing tricks like that? This is a respectable house, and we don't want anything like that in it. Conjuring tricks.
Yeah, you silly fool. Might have set the old place alight.
Everyone accused Fotheringay of a silly trick and blamed him for causing a disturbance. They said it was nothing to be proud of, and despite his perplexity, he was rather inclined to agree with them. In fact, he was virtually asked to leave the premises, which he did. As he went home, he nervously watched the street lamps as he passed them, and it was only when he found himself sitting in his little bedroom in Church Row that he was able to grapple seriously with his memories of the occurrence.
What on earth happened? I didn't want the confounded lamp upset. I'd have been burnt myself. But wait a minute. Perhaps I did want it to turn upside down. After all, I told it to do so. Perhaps just then, when I said it, I did will it to turn upside down without realizing. After all, while it hung there, upside down in midair, still burning with a flame pointing downwards, I felt somehow that it depended on me to keep it there without falling. Perhaps it was my willpower that did it after all. Well, I wonder if I can do it again. That candle on the dressing table. I wonder. Candle, rise up in the air.
Oh! Good Lord, it did happen. Rose right up in the air and hung there. Till I got scared and stopped concentrating. Where are the matches? Where the devil did I put them? Oh, wait a minute. If I can work miracles, let there be a match in my hand. But there is a match in my hand. Where's the box? Where did I put it? Oh, never mind. Match? Be lit. But this is fantastic. Let me be in bed. Not with my clothes on. I mean in bed undressed. I mean in my pajamas. That's better. With a hot water bottle. Let me be fast asleep.
Fotheringay awoke at his usual hour and was pensive all through breakfast time, wondering whether his overnight experience might not have been a particularly vivid dream. At length, just to make sure, he turned again to cautious experiments. For instance, in addition to the two boiled eggs that his landlady served him, he also indulged in a delicious goose egg, laid, boiled, and served by his own volition. At last, he hurried off to work at Gomshott's, the draper's, where he was employed as a clerk in the counting house.
Here he is. Morning, Fotheringay.
Morning, Jackson.
Yeah, you were in rather good form last night at the Long Dragon.
How do you mean?
Rather chucking your weight about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Robinson here was in there just after they threw you out.
Threw me out? Nobody threw me out of anywhere.
Maisie says you were drunk. Yeah, started to smash the place up for them. Quite a scene.
Nothing of the sort. I left early, perfectly sober.
Go on. You were drunk. That's why they had to throw you out.
I tell you, they didn't throw me out. I left.
At 9 o'clock? Never left that early before.
Well, I did last night, anyhow. I was tired.
Of course, after you'd had to pay for the lamp, I dare say you were just about cleaned out. Well, you shouldn't go smashing places up like that. You'd get run in one of these days.
I didn't smash any place up. I didn't throw a lamp at anyone's head. I wasn't throwing out of anywhere, and I wasn't drunk. A lamp fell and got broken. As people seemed to think it was my fault, I offered to pay for it.
When you hadn't even touched it? You must have been drunk. I'll have to tell the boss about you. Oh, Mr. Gomshott.
Don't be a fool. Shut up.
Well, he's probably heard already. Anyhow, he soon will.
Jackson, if you tell him...
Oh, Mr. Gomshott. Did you hear the story about Fotheringay last night in the Long Dragon?
No, what happened?
Jackson, you're drunk. You're drunk as a lord.
Yeah, what happened? Old George here. Good old George. He was so drunk last night at the Long Dragon. So drunk that he picks up the lamp just like this and he... Threw it like that at poor old Maisie.
Bothering ye, for heaven's sake, what's come over him? He's intoxicated. Get him out of here, for goodness sake, by the back door, before any of the customers see him. Really?
Oh, we won't come tomorrow.
Oh, get him out of here and shove his head under the pump.
Yes, sir. He seemed all right a minute before. It just seemed to come over him all of a sudden.
Bless my soul. At 10 o'clock in the morning.
There seemed no doubt about it. Fotheringay had a most unusual gift. The more he thought about it, the more remarkable it seemed to him. He could hardly keep his mind on his work all day, but it really didn't matter in the least, because he could make up for the time lost any moment he chose to do so. It was evident that he must be very careful. But the more he thought about it, the better his gift appeared. It could obviously be used to his own advantage, provided he kept the secret to himself.
Fotheringay, would you mind helping Mr. Robinson in the shop?
Oh, certainly, sir.
Ah, you've already got through those accounts, I see. Yes, very good work, Fotheringay. Very good work.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Really, I don't know which to have. And you're not helping in the least.
The blue would make up very nicely, madam.
The blue? Oh, don't be ridiculous. I wouldn't dream of being seen in the blue. Wouldn't dream of it. Even the brown is better than the blue. I don't like the stripes. Have you nothing else at all?
Only the 14 that I've shown you, madam.
14? Oh, don't be impertinent. I don't like any of them. Well, young man, don't you stand there as well. Show me some bombazines.
Are you sure none of these to your fancy, madam? The latest shades, I assure you.
Of course they're not to my fancy. Take them away.
I should like you to take the blue, madam.
The blue. Oh, but of course I've set my heart on it.
But she just
Madam will have the blue, Mr. Robinson.
Well, of course. How perfectly charming. I love blue. How did you know? 10 and 6 a yard, you said?
That's correct, madam. Shall we say 20 yards?
20 yards? But that's the whole roll.
But of course, madam will take the whole roll.
Oh, you naughty man. I'll have to give you a check.
A man who could work miracles was obviously in a very advantageous position for self-advancement. But like everything else, the exercise of that gift called for a certain amount of practice. It called for caution and watchfulness. And it was in order to rehearse a few miracles in private that took George Fotheringay out that night down the quiet lane behind the gasworks. Now, what was that miracle that Moses did? Turned a stick into a snake. Well, that won't do. Not in the dark. I'll get bitten. What was it happened to that stick in Tannhauser? Turned into a rose bush. The dry wood blossomed. All right, that can't do any harm. Walking stick, blossom. Very nice. Beautiful scent. Well, Rosebush, go back. Oh, it's gone.
Oh!
Oh, dear. It must have gone back there. Sounds as if someone's been...
Who do you think you're throwing brambles at, you fool? You might have blinded me. What do you mean by it? Assaulting an officer of the law?
Well, I'm very sorry. The fact is that I...
Oh, it's you, is it? Young fellow, what was causing trouble last night at the Long Dragon? Gent, what broke the lamp?
Well, I really didn't
mean to. Throwing brambles at a policeman on duty is an offence punishable at law. I'll be troubling you for your name and address, young man.
I'll go to Hades. Oh, dear me. It really is a very powerful gift. I didn't mean the poor man any harm. I wonder what Hades is like.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with your host, Sir Ralph Richardson. The accent is on excitement with a different flair tomorrow evening here on NBC with a pair of unique adventure dramas. One is Six Shooter, and James Stewart stars in it as a soft-spoken but deadly Westerner who battles on the side of law and order in a realistic setting from the frontier days. The other is Jason and the Golden Fleece, and the scene is the New Orleans waterfront. McDonald Carey stars in this intriguing series as a seafaring adventurer looking for the unusual anywhere from the waterfront to the high seas. Hear them both tomorrow evening on NBC. We now continue Theatre Royal with your host, Sir Ralph Richardson.
George Fotheringay performed no more miracles that night, nor did he trouble to see what had become of his flowering walking stick. He returned to the town, scared and very quiet, and retired unobtrusively to bed. And at breakfast the following morning, he could scarcely look his landlady in the eye.
Warm weather we're having for the time of year.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed we are. The milkman was telling me this morning that as he came up the lane, behind the gasworks it was, he found a rose bush growing by the roadside in full bloom in the middle of November. He said he just couldn't believe his eyes. He was sure it wasn't there yesterday evening. Of course, I told him, rose bushes don't just grow up overnight, do they?
No, that's very true. Well, that reminds me, I must get a new walking stick.
A new walking stick? Well, have you lost your old one? Or has it been stolen, more likely? Crime. I don't know what this town's coming to. Now, poor Mr. Winch.
Mr. Winch?
Mr. Winch, the policeman, as used to be.
Why, has anything happened to him?
Vanished. Vanished into thin air. They're dragging the river for his body this morning. Poor Mr. Winch.
Well, I don't think they'll find him in the river, you know.
Well, something's happened to him anyhow. Just vanished in the course of his duty, the milkman says. Like it was off the face of the earth.
Yes, I suppose it is, really.
Well, criminals, murderers. I'd make it hot for him if I had my way.
Well, I suppose they must have made it hot for poor Mr. Winch.
Oh, well, if you do need any more to eat, just ring and ask me, Mr. Fotheringay, and this time...
Yes, Mrs. Glue, thank you. Oh, dear. It didn't have to be Hades, after all. As long as it was far enough. P.C. Winch, come back out of Hades and go to San Francisco. And here's a new suit of clothes for you, in case your uniform got scorched. And after what had happened to Police Constable Winch, I'm glad to say that Fotheringay performed no further miracles all that week. Though I should have been happy to have numbered him among my own flock, George Fotheringay was a nonconformist. He was a regular chapel-goer, and the following Sunday evening found him in chapel as usual. It was there that he heard a sermon which made a profound impression on him. It was delivered by Mr. Maydig, the lay preacher.
Shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? It's not lawful for us to take upon ourselves those acts which are not in man's normal power to effect. And whoso makes his bargain with Mephistopheles, that good may accrue from it to himself, shall find in the fullness of time that the price must be paid in full. Therefore, I say unto you, my brethren...
The tenor of that sermon threw an entirely new light on the gifts which Fotheringay had developed, and he decided to consult Mr. Maydig immediately after the service. It was in Mr. Maydig's study that he finally unburdened himself.
I can only say that I didn't make such a pact with anybody. This ability to perform miracles, it just happened. I found I could perform them.
Well, of course, in a way.
You don't believe, I suppose, that some common sort of person like myself, as it might be sitting here now, might have some sort of twist inside him that made him able to do things just by willpower.
It's
possible. Something of the sort, perhaps, is possible.
If I might make free with something here, I think I might show you by a sort of experiment. Take that tobacco jar on the table, for instance. What I want to know is whether what I'm going to do with it is a miracle or not. Just half a minute, Mr. Maydig, please. Tobacco jar, be a bowl of violets.
Good heavens. It is a bowl of violets. Yes, violets in November. How did you do that?
Oh, I just told it. There you are. That's what I mean. Is that a miracle? Or is it black art? Or what is it? And what do you think's the matter with me? I can't help it.
Quite extraordinary.
This day last week, I no more knew that I could do it than you did. It came over me all of a sudden. It's something odd about my will, I suppose. But that's as far as I can see.
Is that the only thing? Or can you do other things as well?
Oh, Lord, yes, just anything. Here, violets change into a bowl of fish. No, not that sort of fish. Change into a glass bowl full of water with goldfish swimming in it.
It's astonishing. It's incredible. Your eyes are the most extraordinary. No.
I could change it into anything, just anything. Here, be a pigeon, will you? You see? Anything. A bowl of flowers, if I want it. But your pipe's empty. Be a tobacco jar again.
While Mr. Maydig gingerly picked up the jar and refilled his pipe, George Fotheringay told him the whole story, beginning with the affair of the lamp in the Long Dragon and complicated by persistent allusions to the missing police constable Winch. As he went on, the transient pride Mr. Maydig's consternation had caused passed away. He became a simple man in search of advice. And as he listened, Mr. Maydig's demeanor also changed.
It's possible, it's credible. It's amazing, of course, but it reconciles a number of difficulties. The power to work miracles is a gift, a peculiar quality like genius or second sight. Hitherto, it has come very rarely and to exceptional people. But in this case, I've always wondered at the miracles of Mohammed and at Yogi's miracles and the miracles of Madame Blavatsky. But of course, yes, it's simply a gift.
Well, it's P.C. Winch that worries me most.
Winch will have to wait. This is the most important moment. We really must test your powers to the full.
Well, name anything that you want me to do.
It requires careful thought, a very careful thought. We mustn't allow ourselves to rush into anything. You'll stay for supper, of course.
Well, it's very kind of you, I'm sure.
In the dining room. Oh, dear, though. Mrs. Minchin said there was nothing very much left over. Are you hungry?
Well, in a way, but don't you think I might, if it isn't a liberty, I'd be delighted if you would...
But of course, my dear Fotheringay, I didn't think it would really be a pleasure if you really could.
Oh, certainly. What would you like?
A dozen oysters, Colchesters, sole bonfam, roast pheasant, asparagus tips, game chips, crepe Suzette, and a bottle of Chambertin 84 at room temperature.
All that appear on the table, please, as required. And I'll have a Welsh rabbit and a pint of stout for myself.
They sat long over their supper, talking of all the miracles that they would presently perform. What those proposals were, in all their infinite variety, would probably take too long to recite, even if I happened to know them all. Suffice it that they were designed, as I can well believe they were, in a spirit of infinite benevolence, the sort of benevolence that is occasionally termed post-prandial.
There's only one thing that worries me. What are we going to do about poor old P.C. Winch?
Winch will have to wait. There's a great deal more to be attended to first.
Well, anything you say. Some more burgundy.
Thank you.
More burgundy. The same.
Your health. I've been very much concerned of late by the increase in the number of cases of drunkenness in the district. The man in the street, I notice, is apt to drink, not wisely, but too well. Could you do something about it?
Of course. Present company accepted. No more drinking in this town of intoxicating liquors.
Thank you. That, I feel sure, will be in the public interest.
Perhaps you'd also better turn all the beer in the public houses into water, just to be on the safe side.
Well, I like beer.
If you please, Mr. Fotheringay.
Oh, very well. All the beer in the town turned to water.
Aren't you perhaps forgetting something?
Well, and all the stout as well.
Thank you. And now, if you'll come round the town with me, I really think there should be much we can usefully do.
The small hours found them in the market square under the still moon in a sort of ecstasy of thaumaturgy. They had replanned the railway, improved the roads, put a bell tower on the town hall more in accordance with its dignity, drained Flinders Swamp, and even, I'm happy to say, cured me of a wart from which I had been suffering for some time. They were just going on to see what could be done about the injured pier at Southbridge when it struck 3 o'clock on the new bell tower.
3 o'clock? Oh, good Lord, I must be getting back. I've got to be up at work at 8 o'clock.
But we're only just beginning. Think of all the good we're doing. In any case, there's no hurry. Remember Joshua.
Joshua?
Stop the moon in its course. Arrest time.
Oh, that's a bit tall, isn't it?
Why not? Of course, the moon won't stop. You'll have to stop the rotation of the Earth, which will put a stop to time. Just till we finish what we're doing.
But will it be all right?
Of course it will. And just think how much better everything will be in the morning.
Well, if you say so. World, just stop rotating. Oh, dear. I thought something would go wrong. Maydig. Maydig, where are you? There's been an earthquake or something terrible. Maydig. Maydig.
Perhaps I should explain what had happened. There hadn't been an earthquake in the ordinary sense of the word, but as the earth rotates so fast that the surface is travelling anything up to 1,000 miles an hour, when George Fotheringay stopped it like that, everything on the earth's surface was jerked forward more violently than if it had been fired from a cannon. Every human being, every house, every tree, all the world as we know it, had been destroyed. Luckily, with the sole exception of George Fotheringay. Well, there was only one thing for him to do.
Dear, I wish I'd never started all this. Well, I'll see what I can do. World, let me be back before ever the miracles began. Let everything be just as it was before the lamp turned upside down. Back in the Long Dragon, last Tuesday night.
Very well, then. Here comes someone, as it might be me, and stands, as it might be here, and says to the lamp, as I might do, collecting all my willpower, lamp, turn upside down in mid-air without breaking and go on burning steady.
And precisely nothing happened. Well, as I said, it's a rather improbable story. But I can't think the author can have been pulling my leg out of respect for my cloth. After all, he was one of my parishioners.
This is Ralph Richardson again. This week, in our play, taken from H.G. Wells' story, The Man Who Could Work Miracles, Alec Guinness